The truth is, as women, business people, we are birthing a new way to be in business and be in service. And actually, this new way is a calling back to the old ways and the ancient ways. And the matriarchal rising of now is truly just a calling back to the times before when goddess was in charge. So welcome back to the Softpreneur Podcast. I'm Dawn Petrin, and that is Elisa Jakim. And we are here to help anti-establishment thought leaders and holistic wellness visionaries get expanded on how to build an aligned and abundant business by expressing your unique essence with more clarity, courage, and conviction. This world needs you to rise up into the limitless possibilities of your full potential. So let's go.
We love this conversation with the one and only Jamie Arrigo, founder of Wake Up High Five and Arrigo Creative. She teaches small businesses all about marketing and content and teaches all of us how to be strong in our message. And we had just like this very multifaceted conversation that ranged from like traditional advertising and advertising in the 90s and things that millennials are still struggling with to like what it is to be a mom who's working and making it happen, or a woman who's working in this kind of very strange time that we find ourselves in. We went so many places and it was really deep and beautiful. And Jamie is a mother of three as well, has had her newest little baby with us on the call. And my boy Theo was here. And it was just this really beautiful like fabric and continuum of women like birthing who we are together. And we were like breastfeeding on the call. It was incredible. And the conversation was so deep. And I hope you get some tea and listen to this transmission with love, because it was very healing and inspiring for us.
Welcome to the podcast, women. So great to have you. We've been connected with Jamie for a couple of years now, and my connection is mostly through Elisa. So Elisa, maybe I'll let you get started and can tell everyone a little bit about Jamie before we ask her our always first question.
Jamie, I don't even know if you know this, but I think I like first found out about you when I was like fangirling you on the internet, like because I sometimes fangirl like the amazing wellness brands that come out of California. And I think it was like Agent Nature or something. And there was some conversation. I was like, who is this? And then I kind of rabbit hole deep dive and found my way to your amazing community, Wake Up High Five for creators. And yeah, so I'm so excited to chat with you because I feel like we've been like dancing in this community dance for a couple of years now. And I feel like you have so much depth to bring to the conversation we've been having about softpreneurship and motherhood. Jamie just had a new baby. Yay! And well, dive into that too. But we usually always start out with this question with guests, which is, do you have a spiritual practice? And is there anything you'd like to tell us about it?
Yeah. So my spiritual practice is pretty basic. I pray every day. So every morning and every night I pray. So I go to bed thanking God for the day that we just had and thanking him for my children and my safe home. It usually goes like, thank you, God, for my children and my health and my body and our safe home. And thank you for all of the abundance we have in our lives. And I wake up kind of saying the same prayer. And then I do quick meditation during the day and I journal. So it's I don't subscribe to any specific teachings, but I like it all. You know, I try and take bits and pieces from the various teachings and incorporate them in my life, but it's mostly a practice of gratitude and journaling and trying to be present. And yeah, that's it.
Yay. I don't know who said the quote, but if the only prayer you ever said was thank you, that would be enough, right? Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. So yeah, I think that's beautiful and also, I think that's our world, right? We are in a time where, like, ascribing to the idea that this teacher is the right spiritual teacher and the only spiritual teacher is sort of, I want to say, like, over, and that we can recognize the beauty and the truths that come throughout the different spiritual teachings and take what works, right? So, yay. I love it. How many kids do you have?
I have three. I have a 9-year-old, a 5-year-old, and I have a 3-month-old who might wake up during this conversation, in which case I will have to, like, totally lift up my dress and nurse her because I didn't dress appropriately. But yeah, I think you're right, Dawn. The religion conversation is really fascinating. And I don't know if you guys have noticed this, but I've seen a lot of my close friends having this, like, return to Christianity or Catholicism or, like, all of their childhood religions. There's, like, this mass return, which I think is so beautiful because on a global level, there are so many people reaching for God. Like, I have friends that are Jewish that are going to the Christian church. And so I think that it's like this overlap of, you know, beliefs and mostly people just looking for God and ritual and prayer. And I think that we're just, like, living in this beautiful time where it's so easy to get caught up in, like, the negative stuff happening. But the reality is there's just as much positive. And part of that is this, like, massive return to God and Christ consciousness.
Yay. I love it. There was, like, this rejection that happened, right? This, like, rejection that happened where we saw some of, we're like, oh my God, religion causes war. Like, as if we didn't have religion, there wouldn't be war. Or I think about this all the time because my background is, like, philosophy and political science. So then I'm like, ooh, the history of the philosophy, right? But, like, this, like, in order to get out of under the thumb of the church, of the Catholic Church especially, there needed to be this separation of spirit and matter, right? Like Descartes, Dijon dualism, etc. And now we're on the other side. In my opinion, we weren't allowed to study everything. So they were like, let's trick people. We'll say that, you know, God exists out here, but, like, matter and humans and, like, earth, that's separate, which means we can pull it apart and we can really examine it. Now we've examined things so tiny and so big that I feel like it's really hard not to see God in everything.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And I think that it's an interesting thing. I was definitely under the guise of, you know, some ideologies that totally discredited God. And I think it's just, like, one way to control people when you remove the connection to the higher power or you remove someone's spiritual connection. It's really disempowering, right? Because it does feel good feeling like you have somewhere to put that energy or you have something larger than yourself that you can, like, sort of pray to. So I agree with you. I think that for a long time, there was, like, this atheist movement that was, like, blowing through. And I still think that exists. There are ideologies that definitely push that will discredit God, that will especially discredit Christianity. I mean, look at what we just saw at the Olympics. It was, like, so wild, totally making a mockery of Christianity. But I think we're absolutely on the other side of that. It's, like, evidence of this new earth that is being birthed and so many people just returning to the light. For lack of a better term, people are, like, running towards the light. It's beautiful.
I love it. And so interesting because I was thinking about this recently. Like, I feel like now that we're almost, like, we're more than 10 years into this really big, like, trend called wellness, or where I feel like there was, like, a new birth of, like, spiritual seeking on a larger scale, at least in the States or in North America. And I feel like when I started dabbling in, like, the healing arts and wellness circles, and, like, nobody was using the word God, like, everybody was afraid of it. Or maybe we all had, a lot of people had some trauma to unpack around it, which is fair. And now I say it regularly, like, in circles, and I feel like I hear it more all the time. And what a win for us all is, like, as a collective, that, like, we are getting more comfortable bringing God in the conversation, and then on a personal level, like, it's been fun to sort of be more comfortable progressively, like, saying God in different contexts.
Yes, I think you're totally right. And I, you know, I was in LA for, you know, most of my young adult life. And yeah, no one said God. It was like, I'm not religious, I'm spiritual. That was sort of like the tagline. I'm spiritual, I'm not religious. But I'm like, yeah, but, like, religion is spiritual, right? Like, who are you talking to when you talk to your higher power? Like, no one wanted to really say God or have this, like, sort of accept, you know, this no one wanted to admit that these things are, you know, can be linked and connected, and two things can be possible at the same time. You can be religious and you can be spiritual, and yeah.
But I think you hit it on the head when you spoke about like control mechanisms, and that taking God away was a control mechanism, but religion is also a control mechanism, right? So I think some of the rejection was like rejecting the control. And as always, as human beings, we swing. Like, I wish that we could just, you know, find that middle path that like is spoken about in so many of the different traditions. But we were like, oh my God, the church is controlling me. Never mind, I'll go over here. And then we're like in almost like scientism, and now scientism is controlling me. And it stopped being like science, right? It started being almost religious. And so I think this is, I'm not surprised that this would be maybe where our topic would go with you. And when you just spoke about the Olympics, it reminded me of something we were speaking about right before we started recording that had me be like, wait, we need to be recording everything we say, because I didn't watch any of the Olympics and I'm not like a big sportsy person, so that's fine. But in the past, I would have watched some of it and I'm like, I haven't even seen that breakdancer do her silly breakdance. You know, I've been like so far on the outside of that distraction mechanism. So I wonder if we want to talk a little bit about what you were speaking about, that these days, and this is what I see, and actually it relates to marketing, because I want to talk about commercials for a second. You know, when we were growing up, commercials were pretty like blatant, right? I mean, we're all 80s babies, I'm pretty sure. So commercials were pretty like, I wouldn't say like blatant, but in a different way than now. And then I feel like they became more subversive, and then they became like they needed to be sort of like quirky, you know? And then now it feels like commercials are all like postmodern ridiculousness. And I feel like what that shows us is actually the sophistication of the consumer. And like, you know, when we were coming up, TV was newer, right? Like it was like the really rich people who like 20 years before that would have had like a TV in their home. And then when I was growing up, there was like a TV in every room. Like, no lie, we even had one of those like tiny ones in the kitchen. I remember it was like tiny black and white and had a huge box behind it. Yes, I'm dating myself. But I feel like as the sophistication of the watcher, of the consumer came through, commercials got more and more sort of ridiculous. And for me, there's this parallel with like control mechanisms and how you were saying, and I'll let you say, but like that people are like not distracted in the same way as they used to be by like all of the goings ons that are trying to like grab for our attention. And I wonder if that's why things like the Olympics opening ceremonies, which I also didn't see, but of course, like saw the backlash of, I wonder if that's part of the reason that these things have become both more blatant and almost ridiculous. I don't know. What do you think of that? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it's been slowly going that way. Like, think about all of the award shows that we've been seeing as well. Like, they're all just getting more and more ridiculous. I think a couple of things are happening. They're having to fight more for our attention, because I think as more media becomes available, like, I would rather look on social media or like shop for chairs on Facebook Marketplace than watch any other sort of like award show or programming or any of that stuff, right? So I think they're having to fight for our attention. Man, I had two prongs and I lost one of the prongs, but they're having to fight more for our attention. They're having to do things that are more and more insane and ridiculous to keep our eyeballs. And that really is like, if you think about what's going on right now in the currency, our time and our attention, it's the attention revolution, baby. It's like, that is how they get their dollars. And if they don't have people watching their shows, then they don't have anybody. No, advertisers are going to pay attention. So imagine, like with the Olympics, I'm the same. I didn't tune in. Well, also another thing to take into consideration is we don't have TV like that anymore. So previously the Olympics would have been on because you would have had it set to the Olympics and it just would have been on because that's what you do. You do the Olympics, but now you have to put effort in. You have to put more intention in. And it's like an interesting thing, because at the end of the day, how many people are willing to put that effort in to actually watch that show? How many people who do not have television are going to like figure out how to watch the Olympics? And it's like it's not a lot of people. Certainly no one I know was like, I'm watching the Olympics. None of it. And I think, and I didn't watch the breakdancer either. I did see, you know, what happened afterwards. And she's like pretty brilliant. Like I read a couple of interviews and she's like, you know, what I'm doing is art and that's what it's all about. And it's like, I think her performance is a real testament to authenticity and what happens when you just do your own thing, right? She was the only one that was like bouncing around like this. And she's the only one that anyone will remember, probably even next year, but certainly in 10 years, she's the only performance that anyone will have any, you know, reference to.
Right. She's become a meme, like the memeiest of the Olympics. Although the other thing that happened to me with the Olympics, and I think this really actually relates to online marketing, is I started following Alona, or I don't know what her name is exactly, but like how to pronounce her name. But she is this hilarious rugby player. And the reason I started following her actually was like a reel of hers went viral where someone was like, she, you know, I think I first saw her on TikTok, but I really am not on TikTok very much because then I'm like, rah, on TikTok. But it was like something like about BMI being 30. And she was like, yeah, my BMI is 30. Actually, it's 29.7. And then she like really spoke to this comment in this way, like, and this is dear to my heart because I feel like women are so often judged on like their weight, and that's where their worth comes from. And this is this like amazing rugby player who can like probably could make her way through the men's Olympics team with her like strength and her like, you know, like one-pointed like focus. And now she's got over 3 million followers and it's all from hilarious memes that she's been doing or like just like her being her funny self, right? You know, and there is something there. There is something there. And thanks for reminding me about the television. Like we don't have TVs and I'm like, oh, I missed all of the synchronized swimmers. I do like that. I just remember.
I do like those too.
You know,
it's cute.
It's cute. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the memetics, that movement of memetics, like that Australian, his name, I don't even know, but that Australian breakdancer, her academic career is probably going to soar like crazy. And I wouldn't be surprised if she started getting sponsorships from like actual, like even like in alignment with breakdancing culture clothing lines because of the attention that she received.
Yeah, it's so interesting because I feel like with that sort of like somewhat democratization of media with social media that we've seen also since the rise of the internet too, like in the early aughts and all of the things, or late 90s, early aughts. It's funny because I think a lot of millennials grew up with this like feeling that we needed to be famous or something, a lot of pressure to be famous. And I don't think that's let up. I think it's probably only increased with social media. And I'm sure a lot of millennials still feel that way as well as the younger generations. So I'm just wondering, Jamie, like you as a mom, do you have thoughts about that in terms of like your children's relationship to media or like also just like personal relationship to what is it that we all feel like we need to sort of be famous in our own lives now?
Man, this has been such a theme for me this year because I had a Gene Keys reading. The thing I had to overcome was obscurity. Like my strength was, I'm not saying in the correct terms, but like my biggest offering was bringing beauty to the world. But my biggest challenge would be overcoming obscurity. So I think about that a lot. I think especially after leaving Los Angeles and feeling like a sense of relevance in being there because you are involved in a lot of different events that are going on and you're networking with people that are doing things and you're doing things like, you know, my life looked very different when I lived in LA in terms of like what I did, who I associated with, the kinds of projects I took on, the kinds of people I knew, all of that stuff. But I think that like, I really wanted separation from that, especially for my kids, because I do think that it's hard to be in two places at once. And I found myself, even if I was home, I was always somewhere else because I was trying to, you know, trying to be relevant or be important to other people. And I think right now what I'm realizing is that like the most important thing I can do is like be here and be relevant to the people that are inside my home. And as far as my kids go, I really try and keep them away from media. I mean, my kids are still relatively young, but my son is like, I want a cell phone. I want a YouTube channel. And I'm like, no, you know, I think it's hard because we are growing up, like our kids have had they've had screens in their faces their entire lives. They've seen screens their entire lives. Like we're actually the millennials. We're actually the last generation who grew up without having social media, right? So it's a different thing for them. But I think like as the longer you can hold it off and the more you can like really instill their values coming from, you know, who they are at home and the relationships they have. And I really think happiness is achieved through not necessarily accomplishments, but like projects. And like my son plays the guitar and he's like a very good artist and like trying to build their confidence up in that way so that they don't have to have anything external validating them or making them feel important. For me, it's like, I want my son to be really confident in the things he does, regardless of if there's a screen in front of him, which I don't know that I necessarily possess that. I think that we're kind of programmed to think like if it doesn't happen on the internet, it doesn't happen. And so I think we also grew up in a time where we were all told we were so special. Like I think there was a real change in the way we were parented and the way we were taught because we grew up with everybody telling us you're so special. Even now, what we hear is like, you, like all these people I follow, you have a unique purpose. We do. And all of us are unique and all of us are special. But the reality is we're not all going to be famous. And it's a hard thing to accept.
Wow.
But it's true.
It's so interesting. It's like walking this duality, right? Because it's like there's that thing Steve Jobs, I think, said, who's like, the people who think they're crazy enough to change the world are the ones who will, right? So it's like you need to like, on the one hand, if you want to move forward with your passionate purpose, like you need that little spark of like, I am here to do this thing. And then at the same time, that reminded me of like this advice that felt so life-changing when I was like maybe 25 and I'd wanted to be an actress in New York and I got an Alexander lesson, like this mind-body lesson for actors, which funnily enough, Alexander was one of the modalities that kind of brought me into the healing arts and stuff. But this teacher, who's probably like 30, 40 years older than me, he was like, strive to be ordinary. Like, what if for a little while you could just let yourself be a quote normal person, like what would that be for you? And being in my mid 20s, I felt like this took this huge pressure off of my back because I think, and maybe especially that's like a big part of that decade in one's life where, and like growing up being told you're special and feeling like you have this special purpose and you're like constantly not living up to your potential. And then you look back and you're like, that was the time, you know, like that's part of the, that's part of the machine, like part of the narrative. But yeah, I will kind of like put that there because I feel like I could go in 20 directions right now.
I have a direction for us to go in, and it's calling back to the democratization, maybe of fame and also control mechanisms. So I think that in the past, pre-social media, there were a couple of ways to be famous, right? Like you could become an actor, you could become an athlete, you could become like someone in the government or like maybe like an academic, but you'd have to like win a Nobel Prize or whatever. Like a writer, you could be a big, like an artist that got chosen. It seems like in the past, the only way to get in front of people was to be like chosen. I mean, we look at Hollywood, right? And the stuff that comes out about Hollywood where like who was actually running the studios? And, you know, if we look at things like, oh, shoot, I forget the regular term for it right now.
Pedophile.
Pardon? Oh, yes, that too.
Yeah.
Another tweet, predictive programming, right? Like Hollywood was so much about like, what's going to happen next? Okay, let's like, and that's why I'm like, whenever I'm like, oh gosh, look at what Netflix is doing now. Oh no, the aliens are coming, aren't they? Right? You can like see what revelations or like movements that they're going to want us to be okay with based on like Hollywood, like or whatever, all a smoke and mirrors show, and like art, and people like, oh, it's just art. And you're like, well, yes. And now, and this is, and so, okay. So now there's been social media. There's like democratization of fame where like, you know, we've got niche celebrities, right? Like people who like, maybe they don't get like billions of views, but they get millions of views in like the exact right community or the exact wrong community. I convinced one of our coaching clients to go on TikTok, and I was like, you're gonna go viral. She went viral right away, but she's like a marriage coach with like tons of counseling experience and stuff for women. And she went viral with like the angry incels of TikTok. So there's like, you know, thousands of comments, and she's like, never mind, no more TikTok. So anyway, you can go viral and become a niche celebrity or like a micro influencer. And it's like the powers that shouldn't be have less control over that. And then at the same time, we all know that big tech is like in charge of social media. So there's still like, it's like, I don't know exactly what it is, but it's like, there was like big control mechanisms and then became democratized. And then there were like a whole bunch of like littler control mechanisms, and we can like become famous with our peers now and like find our communities. And if you're an entrepreneur, maybe the people who are going to like want to invest or collaborate in us in a way that I don't think we could have in the 70s. Like you needed to be like, you know, Jimi Hendrix to be someone who was going to get like picked to, you know, give $100,000 to produce a 3-minute video to end up on MTV. Right. And now with like TikTok, you can, it makes me think of this girl, this man in finance meme, right? Like, do you know that? Like looking for a man in finance, like 6'5", blue eyes. Wow. That's amazing. So she just was like, I think I just came up with the hit song of the summer. And then she was like, just said like, looking for a man in finance, 6'5", blue eyes, trust fund or something like that.
Oh, I did see that. Yeah.
Right. And then she's like, okay, producers, do something with it. And then a whole bunch of people picked it up. It like got like, it was all over the place, and it's like released on Spotify. Like a DJ and her have collaborated. It's released on Spotify. I'll look and see how many listeners. And like this woman, like she's just a funny like comedian, right? Like she's not even, I don't even think she's a stand-up comedian, although she probably could be now, right? It's also that Huck Tua girl I think of. Like you just do something funny, it gets in front of the right people. It might be like you don't want to be known for that meme, and then all of a sudden you're going to be like able to capitalize on it and create an entire business out of like something small and ridiculous. And I don't know. I think that that's something magical about the time that we're in, where yes, we live in 1984 Big Brother craziness. I mean, I'm in Canada, so. And it's like we keep on like sneaking through the cracks, and we keep on finding our community in a way that I don't think we would have been able to in the past.
Yes, you are absolutely true. I think that we, social media and technology is really a double-edged sword. And I think that, yeah, we have the capability to connect with people. We have the capability to make tons of money remotely. We have the capability to create literally any business you want. Like we live in such a freaking fantastic time.
So Jamie was just speaking about like with social media and technology, the good and the bad of it. We really are in a magical time because we can do almost anything, like, you know, be recording a podcast with friends and then have a little tiny, tiny baby crying and go get it and not have to stop. And I think that that's one of the magical things about now. And say what you want about like women's liberation and feminism, where it came from and why it came from, I do think that we have a crazy amount of freedom now to be, and especially now actually that we're on the, like the pendulum is swinging in the other direction. Like you were speaking about friends becoming Christian and embracing these traditional values again. And I think like The role of mother seems to be back and stronger than it used to be. And that's a swing, not that that's everywhere, but like women are actually claiming like their power in relation to being like womanly, not like I always think of Margaret Thatcher and like how in the 80s, the only way to be a powerful woman was to be like a man, you know, or to act like a man. But now I feel like we've come to this magical place, just like how like science and spirit might be coming back together. I think like womanhood, motherhood, and like Shakti, like divine power has come back as well. And like now I feel like you can be a woman who is expressing her talents and maybe even like, you know, trading for currency, like being in business, and you can still prioritize your cutest little baby ever and your family, right? In a way that like, I feel like in the 90s and the early 2000s and even 2010s, it wasn't available to us.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a really important, like the digital age and the time we're living in really empowers moms to be able to have a better life work balance, because the reality is you can totally have a full-time job remotely. You know, it's hard. You're going to lose sleep at night. You're going to stay up late and you're going to wake up early, but like you're not going to be at an office from 9 to 5. And I think that there's a lot of things happening in terms of like the way that we're welcoming life. I mean, certainly we're seeing a lot more people strive for natural births, home births, free births, more like contact napping, more breastfeeding, longer breastfeeding. Like, I think we're having this sort of, you know, reclamation of motherhood where we are getting back to a time where the connection is being prioritized as opposed to, you know, putting your kids in daycare from a young age and prioritizing career. I think that it's super unnatural to put your children, certainly, you know, your children or your family second. I think it's like a very weird thing. And as I start diving back into working more and figuring out ways to be able to do, you know, podcast recordings and making more time for the community I'm building and my creative work, you know, I'm grateful that I live in a time where I can do all of that remotely. And that wasn't available to us 10 years ago. And I think that there are so many more employers, and we can actually thank COVID for this, because I think this actually paved the way for employers to get rid of some of their real estate to like lighten their load in terms of everything they have to pay for every month, and recognize that like people can totally be productive in their own home. This is harder to be productive, but you know, we do have the ability now to work remotely, and employers are recognizing, you know, the importance of mothers, I think, especially like millennial mothers. This is kind of, I'm kind of all over the place, but like millennial mothers, millennial women for sure. I think millennial mothers are the largest, we have the largest purchasing power in the United States. We spend more money than any other group. I think it's millennial women. And so I think that there is, like, from an employer standpoint, there's this entirely other demographic that's often been forgotten about, and that is women who have kids. There's like this group that prior to having remote work available to us were not even considered in the hiring landscape. And I think now it's like, oh, there are so many ways to juggle that and to make it work. Like, you know, if you're doing remote work and you don't necessarily have to be working a 9 to 5, you can absolutely have like your hours at night, your hours early in the morning, as I said, and there's ways to make it work now.
100%. And it's also like, I think there's this real beautiful shift in what it looks like to show up as an entrepreneur or as a woman with a job and as a mother. Like, we have Elisa's baby toddler is on business calls a lot. Like, dude shows up on sales calls, man, you know? And that actually is like, I don't know. I don't know that I saw it before we were doing it, although I'm sure people were doing it. But you know what? We work, our clients also have babies. And so like when Elisa is like, oh, sorry, got to bring Theo on. And we don't put him on the internet so much, but he's not allowed. But he is allowed to, you know, be in existence. We don't have to pretend he doesn't exist. And it means that our clients can also bring their babies to the calls and they're able to like do their work. And there's like a permission field, as Kelly would say, for them to be women who are also earners, who are also like creative people doing their mission and creating this world we want to live in. And I think that's like, that's the, you know, we're all like, let's create the new earth. But I feel like we are in the new earth if we choose to live in a way where we are different than before, right? It's like we create by being.
Completely.
It's true. Yeah. And I think previously there was like this, it was almost like denying that women had kids. It's like this phenomenon, like almost denying that, like, you know, like, and also like shame around it. Like if I'm a professional person, I can't be like, well, my kids, like when I was in LA, I was really fortunate. I've been like kind of thinking back to the first year of Winnie's life, but I was really fortunate to have all my clients were like, just bring Winnie. And I like, you know, I had like those, I would be on like a photo shoot. I'm going to spare you guys. I would be on a photo shoot and I would have like those cordless breast pumps, and I'd be on a photo shoot wearing cordless breast pumps, pumping my boobs. And all my clients understood that like that was the priority, was my child, and I'll come there and I'll create great work and your brand will look good, but my baby has to come right now.
I love this so much. And I think it circles back to really like authenticity, right? Like if you are bringing the things that are like so real to your life and to your experience into how you show up all the time or in creative process, then it's like when people are with you, let's say on social or in a call, you're like actively practicing being yourself in all situations. And I feel like, Jamie, it's been such an interesting journey. It's like we're a new, maybe like a new type of woman right now who is like, yes, I am breastfeeding on the call. That's like part of life. And it's like awkward at times and it's empowering. And it's also, I kind of feel like having now being like almost 2 years into this journey. And I mean, it was kind of nuts because I didn't take much of a pause with work after my son was born, which had some blessings too, because his birth was challenging and he was in the NICU when he was born for 2 weeks. So I like went back to work because I was like, I need to put my energy and myself somewhere. But like I think that bringing your child with you and like living with that, and even in this funny Zoom kind of life and Zoom connections that we build, our online connections, there's this almost grounding quality that it brings when you're in groups or groups of women, because a lot of the time that's like who we're talking to, where there's like, oh yes, there's just something like innate, like I love it. I feel so fortunate to be able to like be holding a beautiful babe while I'm like talking to women about their creative projects. And it feels like maybe in a strange way, it's like awkward and funny, but we're also like recreating a kind of village model. And even if we're more disparate, and Jamie and I were talking like at the very beginning before we started recording about what it's like to be in close proximity to your family, but even if we're disparate or more scattered in certain ways, we also have this sort of like new community where we can show up as ourselves and be like, it's normal for a woman to like have her baby with her when she's working.
Yeah. You said at the beginning of that, a new type of woman. And I just don't think it's new. Like prior to like nuclear family separation from each other and even the community that we were in, like I'm pretty sure women didn't like, oh, and now I don't work at all for 2 years. That was like that, you know, and we talk about like homeschooling or unschooling now. That was just how life was. Like you had your baby, and then when you were healed enough to be up and around, / probably before that, you went back to your work with your baby, right? Like strapped on you and like that, like always having the baby with you. But like, it's not like I'm thinking about like indigenous tribes in North America. And I don't know all of that, of course, but like, you know, they're like, you go back and you keep gathering, right? Or you're nomadic and it's not like you have your baby. And so you're like, well, actually, I'm just gonna stay in this, longhouse now, even though it's like the rest of my tribe is now heading like up into the mountains. And so I liked what you said, reclamation, like feels like a reclamation of the the feminine, and also like a reclamation of, it's of the feminine, but like of a long time ago feminine, at least for the, like those of us from European descent, where we have been like separated since before history, right? But when the woman was really, back in our matriarchal past, I am certain that woman kept her power when she had, had a child. She didn't become, and not that like earning is the only way to have power. Like that is not what I'm saying, but like in our society, your value is measured by dollars. And this is a problem that I've had with the feminist movement since I realized I was a product of it, was that like we all know this, right? Like the women's work of caring for the home and caring for the children and raising them up. That wasn't like you get paid six figures a month for that, right? It's just like, you just do that quietly and silently without complaining in order for the person who's going to be out there in the public world to go out and earn. So yeah, I feel like I went on for a long time there, but I just wanted to call back to what I said, that I don't think that valuing women as mothers and also women being, you know, capable of their creative pursuits while being mothers is new. I think it's real.
I just wanted to really quickly say, like, yeah, because the funny thing about this, and I don't know if you felt this, Jamie, is like doing work this way with my baby close by, and you spoke to that when you were too in Los Angeles and bringing Winnie with you on shoots, is like, it feels very natural and it feels very intuitive. And that's the funny thing to me about parenting, because I think a lot of us millennials, like, you know, we were like scared to have children for a while there or something, maybe. But like the entire process for me has been deeply intuitive and not that sort of like idea that's painted to a lot of us. It's so hard and it's so this and it's so that. And I realize maybe being in this digital entrepreneur space puts me in a privileged position to be able to say that, but also like, oh, it can be so embodied, this whole, it needs to be, right?
It does. And I think if you think about the energetics of it, I think about the feminism movement a lot, because I think a lot of us fell into that trap. So when you say that we were sort of like scared, it's like, yeah, we were conditioned to feel ashamed to want to have children. There was shame surrounding, like, you couldn't win in that movement because there was shame surrounding having kids. There was shame being a working mother. There was shame being a not working mother. It was like shame all the way around. So I think in part of this new earth that we're rolling out and this integration of actually being very empowered as mothers and being able to like maintain creative careers and mothers as well, it's like releasing that shame and recognizing that like there's no shame in any way you do it. And I think like us getting like letting go of that pressure we put on each other, and this is like what women do to each other in the feminism movement. It was a totally orchestrated, in my opinion, totally orchestrated to turn women against each other when we should be our greatest allies. Is like, I think we're in this point now where many of us who are actually hip to that manipulation are saying like, do like, however you choose to do it, do it. And like, I support your choice and I hope you support mine. And I think like, you know, welcoming a baby to your work as we are here is like, no, there's actually no shame in this. I'm not like, and imagine like that energy being put on our kids, having to hide that you're a mother or hide that you're pregnant. Like that is just not fair. It's like, this is the best thing going on right now, whatever with work. I hope it goes well, but like, this is the most important thing.
Yeah. And we like, I do think too, like, okay, what am I modeling to my son with this? Like funny, like, it's just I think it's very interesting what he's getting to witness to this sort of like that no separation, like mommy's here with me and she's like, and she's having like these very deep conversations and chats. And yeah, it's just like, it's a funny experience, but it's also like, it's the best.
Yeah. And then I'm like, you know, a childless woman and I'm ashamed too. So it's like, right? I mean, I'm not necessarily, like, not necessarily ashamed, but like, it's like there was no winning. And I think we can create a world where it's all winning, you know?
Yes. Yes. However you do it. That's it. It's like, I have so many friends that don't have children and they won't ever have children. And that was their choice, but they're still so motherly and such amazing caretakers and the way that they show up for that role. And I think that, like, that's not to be discredited either. You have women that are like, well, she never had children. It's like, so what? Like, we have to quit passing judgment on other women and their journeys and the way they choose to welcome or not welcome life or work or not work. It's like, I think that that's the new earth, is everybody just minding their own business.
Yeah. I love it. And speaking of the new earth, look at that seg. I'm real good at this. You have a community. Can you tell us about your community? Wake Up High Five. I know it's like, yeah, tell us about it.
So, I started it in 2020 as mostly like a sounding board for all of us in cities who were getting, like, you know, excluded from society because we didn't want to do certain things the government said we had to do. And then in 2022, I kind of relaunched it as more, of like a creative hub geared towards connecting creative entrepreneurs who didn't want to play by the rules with LinkedIn. You know, like, there were so many people who were like, I had a job interview in 2022 and I actually just looked up there. I could tell right away when I was on the interview that there was somebody on there who had looked at my social media. Like, my social media was like very active at this point of me being like, you know, screw the globalists, whatever. But I could just tell, like, she was on the interview like this the whole time, you know? I was like, oh, this is not good. I just looked at their social media and I was like, oh, it's so woke. I would have lasted like 2 weeks there. Like, the cultural, you know, the company ethos and the culture of those companies. It's like, dude, I'm never, ever going to be quiet and I'm never going to be like, I'm Jamie Arrigo. I'm a she, her, and whatever, whatever. Not like, if you want to put pronouns in your bio, more power to you, but I'm just never going to play that game. And so I created this community for other creatives who want to collaborate and connect with people who are like-minded. So inside the community, I try and connect people for various projects. And that's kind of the main goal. Like, we're introducing new programs and courses inside. Like, right now we're doing a website mastermind to help people like revamp their website. So we basically have 8 of us and we'll like meet to review each other's websites. And I basically just try and like get people connected so that they can create work and not have to worry about censoring themselves. Cause I think a lot of us, you know, self-censored over the last few years to keep work. Like, I can't tell you how many people were like, I feel the same way you do, but I have to wear a mask or I have to get a fake paper because I have to keep my job. And I just like, don't think there's any power in that. Like, you're back to the shame frequency. And I don't believe in it. So yeah, that's why I created it.
It feels like a truly inclusive community. And I feel like we're not even allowed to say inclusive anymore, right? Because like, inclusive actually means like exclusive, like inclusive to everyone who agrees with us. Yeah, I love it. And I love this. Like, you started by saying like, we're people who don't want to play the LinkedIn game. Cause yeah, who aren't like, it's, if you can figure out how to make those things work for you, oh, heck yes, right? Like, that's awesome. But if we could just like be in community and with a group of people who like wanted to support us to rise in our businesses, in our lives, etc., without needing to be like, oh, I think I'll do a POV B-reel because I heard those are doing really good if my looping sound is really short so then people watch it a lot. Like, that feels real nice.
It's nice. We also have a really good book club. Right now we're reading Africa Brooks, The Third Perspective, which is great. I mean, it's just, I think it's really good to join with people in community and just try and find others who, you know, want the same things you want, we want, which is, you know, a truly equal playing ground when it comes to hiring for jobs, a meritocracy.
I felt like there were like maybe like 5 years that have existed in the last 5,000, I don't know how long, but like at least 2,000 years where you could like be proud to be a woman and also you know, to be from like a European descent. And I want that for everyone. Like, let's all be able to be proud of who we are. Let's all be able to be proud of where we came from, our abilities and the things that we're not so good at, you know, and the swing is a little bit ridiculous. And also it's optics, right? And I think that's like, that's the problem. It's like, can I pick the person who is the most obviously a part of multiple different like cultural spaces that have been denigrated for the last 100 years? And then I'm going to put that person on the top. Now, I love the idea of stopping. Like, I love the idea of not judging someone as better or worse based on their cultural heritage. But instead of like us coming into a place where it could be like at true equality of opportunity, it like swung all the way over. And I'm not like complaining about being a white woman at all. And I like, it's like, it's interesting because so many of the precepts of the woke, if you take them a little bit, feel really good, right? Like, because there's a lot of true goodness in it. And when you go too far, you end up excluding and shaming, like you said. And there are things that people we're not in control of that. I mean, we might have, I do kind of believe we choose our parents, you know, before we come, but that was a long time ago. That was prior to like being a cognizant human in a body.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. Like if you think of the most empowered we feel, well, if you think of things on an energetic scale and the most empowered we feel, like when we're enlightened and we're in love and all of those things, and we feel truly unstoppable, right? Shame is like one of the lowest, it could be the very lowest vibration, right? So what happened, like, is essentially tried to take the shame from certain groups of people and displace it onto other groups of people. So it's not removing the shame from that other group of people. That group of people still feel shame because they've been deeply programmed over generations to feel shame about the color of their skin, which is such a shame because it's not a reflection of your ability to succeed or perform or any of those things. But what they did is they now created a new subgroup of people. Now, like, you have to be shameful if you're this color. So they're slowly just programming different groups of people to feel ashamed of who they are. When at the end of the day, it's like, we should all be like extremely proud of who we are. And yeah, have we had like massive mistakes in the past with how we treat each other? Yes. Do we continue to treat each other poorly based on our beliefs, our skin color? Yes. But does that have to affect all of us on an individual basis and really control the way we move forward into this next phase of humanity? No, it doesn't. But it's a shame that people do fall victim to that manipulation, because I, for one, have never felt ashamed of who I am or the color of my skin. I feel really excited about who I am most days. And when I feel bad about myself, it's not because of the color of my skin. It's because of size of my thighs or something equally ridiculous, right? But it's like, I just watch so many people be like, I am a privileged this person and I'm ashamed because, and it's like, oh man, you're just taking the bait. You are letting yourself totally fall victim to that media propaganda, you know.
And what doesn't happen from that is the heart opening more. And I feel like when the heart opens more, then we all become vulnerable. We all become loving and everyone can like rise if all of our hearts open more. And it may be like the truest control mechanism is just trying to close the heart down. So you see someone else as the other and then you're like, oh, and it's scarcity, right? It's like, I can't have that thing because now that person has it. And so then I need, or the person who has it is like, I must protect it or this other person will take it from me. And that is like, absolutely not, I think, what the well-meaning people who like hold on to these like ideas in this movement, I don't think that's what they wanted. But like you said, it's so easy to take the bait. And then once you've taken the bait, then you're kind of screwed, because as soon as you choose to look the other way, and I don't mean like look the other way by like closing your eyes. I mean, like, as soon as you choose to take into account the other's perspective. And then if you say anything, you're automatically extricated from the group. And that is like human beings, our most basic need is belonging, like oxygen and then belonging and then food. I mean, maybe that's the scientists would be like, wrong, we need food and water and then belonging. But like, why would we even want food and water if we didn't belong anywhere, right? Like, why would we want to live without that belonging? And I think that is that exclusionary way of being is perhaps even stronger than I mean, or maybe that's what wars are too. Like, it feels like that is the strongest control mechanism, is exclude and then we feel lost, and then we just do as we're told. And I don't know, man, that's not my vision for the collective, you know? But Jamie, what's your vision for the collective?
Yeah, I think everything you just said was really right on. And the goal of all of this, I think, is to split us into smaller and smaller groups. So I think that that's why they, you know, it's like, we're all humanity. We're all up here. We're human beings having the, or, you know, we're spiritual beings having this human experience, right? But then they're like, but wait, you guys are colors. So now you have to separate into colors. But wait, you're genders. Now you have to separate into genders. But wait, you're a part of this party. You're a part of that party. So that is the dark energy really wants us divided by all of these very superficial things so that we forget our collective humanity and the fact that most of us at our core want exactly what you said. We want food, water. We want to belong. We want safety. We want healthy children. We want healthy environments. It's like very basic. And I think, you know, my vision for the new earth is everybody taking radical responsibility for their lives and recognizing that what we're seeing right now, both the good and the bad, is truly a manifestation of our own inner struggles. And, you know, all of the good stuff we see, all of the bad stuff we see, we are co-creating that. And I think that the more we recognize that, the more we take ownership of our day-to-day lives, like the simple parts, the better life is. I think that it's so easy right now to put our focus on what's happening all around us. But when you do that, you're not really taking responsibility for what's happening in your own home. And I think that that's where the magic really happens. And that's where things start. That's like the building block. If you maintain a safe home with happy children, your children are going to go out and they're going to make other people happy. If you have a good relationship with your spouse, you and your spouse are going to go out and you're going to make other people happy. And we have so much focus on things we can't control that we feel powerless and we feel like we're spinning out. But I think in the new earth, we all recognize our own part that we're playing in both the beauty and the destruction of the planet.
Thank you, Jamie. Makes me think about what Wayne Dyer used to say. It's like, if you walk around the world looking to be offended, you'll find a reason to be offended, right? And he used to say that the thing, like, when you squeeze an orange, what comes out? Juice, because that's what's inside. And it's like, when you get squeezed, what comes out? It's what's inside, right? And so, like, can we walk around this earth when we get squeezed, like, sharing love, like, or like letting the love pour out of us? Been making a strange, juicy metaphor, but yeah, thank you so much. Thank you for sharing your vision with the collective, for the collective with us. Thank you for creating a community for creatives to connect and find each other and get inspired. And it's really, I'll just reflect that it feels like a space where people that want to do work that is beautiful or artistic or just like seeing things differently, or innovators are coming together. And amazingly, I joined right after having a baby, and it was such a nice feeling, like, to, I guess, maybe this full circle moment in this conversation, to be like, oh, I'm, you know, at home with my baby doing this whole like work business owner thing, and I have other creatives I can connect with in this very like liminal transitional time in life. So thank you for what you are bringing forward in the collective already.
Yeah. Thank you. Elisa, it's been really nice getting to know you and your work. And I love what you guys are putting out. I think what you guys are contributing is really beautiful. And you're definitely, you know, walking the walk and creating work that is having a ripple effect around you with like positivity, even the people you're working with and the messages you're putting out and all of it. And I've seen, you know, Elisa, I've like watched you like really step into this powerful place, and it's been a really beautiful thing to watch. And so, yeah, I'm humbled that you guys asked me to be on, and I'm grateful to share this time with you. So thank you.
Oof, thank you so much. Yeah. Yeah. I agree with Elisa. Thank you for doing the work you're doing. And yeah, thanks for witnessing Elisa step into herself, right? I think we were all hiding. And that's the beauty of that community, is that you're creating a space where people don't need to hide. And oof, don't we all need that? So speaking of that, where can people find you, Jamie? Where's the best place for people to find you?
Man, I have so many feeds and things. You can find, if you want to learn more about the community, wakeuphighfive.com. And that's Instagram is at wakeuphighfive. And I'm Jamie_Arrigo on Instagram and Twitter. I have like 50 Twitter followers, but I'm going to start being more vocal on Twitter because it's kind of a fun place to hang out, I'm finding. So
love it. Okay. Figure out how to make it work and then come back and tell us all. That's not fair.
Are you guys not on Twitter? Oh my gosh. I'm so shocked because I feel like it's a good place for business, for, you know, connecting over business stuff. So
all right.
Yeah. Well, I'll let you know.
If any of our listeners are really good at Twitter X, send us a DM.
Oh, X. That's so often I'm on it. I don't even know the name of it.
Twitex.
Twitex.
Yay.
Oh my God. Imposter syndrome. You caught me.
No, I think it's still also, I think you still tweet on X. So, you know, we can't trust Elon to come up with names that we can pronounce. So we'll just let it be at that. Yay, Jamie, thank you so much for being here. Yeah, and excited to connect more.
Thanks so much, guys. I'm looking forward to hearing the episode, and thanks so much for having me.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Softpreneur Podcast. If it resonated with your ethos and your soul, we would be so grateful to you if you leave a review wherever you listen to your podcast.
This helps us grow so much, and it also helps more visionary business owners find the show so they can make their dream life their real life. So many blessings and love.